Well, ladies and gentlemen, welcome once more to another episode of Squirrel Snow here on KBOO 90.7 FM. And my name is Ender Black. And as you know, my main point of focus for the past year, year and a half, is to show you or provide for you, procure the concept of galactic awareness and also animal awareness, as both are very much interconnected. And this is kind of the main point of what we do here on Squirrel Snow, is to provide you with galactic awareness and what we have termed here the ongoing protocols of galactic interaction. So today we have an amazing guest, a person that has an incredible story about things that he experienced, things that he is able to remember. And it's incredible. It's incredible. And for those few of you that are skeptical and you might not believe entirely that these things are actually taking place in our solar system, the Earth is actually quite developed in industrially and corporate wise. Well, this should be very entertaining. So, Tony, what a pleasure to have you in Squirrel Snow. The first thing, I know we could talk for hours. You have an amazing story. And the first thought is, give us a summary of all the industrial activities that are taking place in our solar system right now.
Wow. So that's the first time I've opened with that question. So hello, thanks for having me. And hello, everybody listening. And I would say to people that are skeptical that it's very normal. And I would be shocked if people were not skeptical at the things that I talk about. It would be weird. It'd be weird if there were not a great deal of people that would go, come on, this can't be real. And that's why I feel it's important to talk about, because this is a reality. In the beginning, when I got my memories back, I didn't expect it. I wanted counseling more than anything. I didn't know what was going on. And the more I researched what I remembered, the more things kept coming true and making sense and like getting confirmations. And then I worked with researchers and there were other confirmations. So I would not be speaking publicly if I didn't have a great deal of evidence behind what I'm saying. So to get to your question, though, like the scale of industrialism inside our solar system is massive. I didn't personally know this when I was up there, but the consensus is from other people that I've spoke to that were up that are confirmed, have a great deal of confirmation. Say there's something like 10 and a half million people on Mars right now, living on Mars in underground bases. I was taken in 1982 and I lived for what's called a 20 and back 20 year tour, a career return program, they called it. It's a glossy name for being a slave labor. And I was traded from program to program and ended up for the most of the part being on the Ceres Colony Corporation, which is a small planetoid in between Mars and the asteroid belt, the Ceres dwarf planet. And there were about 250,000 people living there, a little under 250,000 people living inside of Ceres that had been a breakaway group from Europe after post-World War II. So these are people that on the German side of the war made contact with extraterrestrials and developed their own spacefaring vehicles and had a treaty grant them the real estate of Ceres Colony, and they moved there and began to build infrastructure in there. So there's a massive industrialized, Ceres Colony was not so much industrialized as it was just a construction where they were moving into caverns and looking for existing caverns. But the name of the game that they were doing, and my job that I was there, I was working on ship, I was ship maintenance, and then I was a cargo engineer on ships towards the end of my career there. And they were trading with extraterrestrial races from very, very far, great distances away. Not just, you know, the UFO community is kind of stuck on the same star systems around us. You know, everything's a Pleiadian or an Arcturian or, you know, the nearby stars that we can see. But the reality is that the space programs are, there's nothing new around the newer stars. So for them to trade and get advanced technologies, and to have things available to trade to other ETs that are useful, they must go very far away. And they can, in fact, go extragalactic to other galaxies, nearby 20 or 30 galaxies, and contact millions of sentient races, spacefaring races, and trade with them. Goods for tech or tech for tech or tech for goods. And Our mission was to acquire technology by any means necessary. That was the ship's mission, was the mandate. And so there's quite a bit built out in the solar system. There are many things going on there. The thing is, a lot, when we got out into the solar system and the humankind got into space, you know, the United States was 20 years behind, 20 or 30 years behind the breakaway Germans. They found that most of the solar system is already built into by other species. So real estate is very scarce up there, the same way it is down here. Like, it was hard. It's hard to find a place on a rock that doesn't already have somebody occupying it. And so there are a lot of treaties, and trade is the trade for information or trade for, you know, goods or genetics are the name of the game. So that's what's going on up there. And it's quite advanced, and it's been happening for a long time already.
Yeah. Yeah. That's information I also have, which, you know, when I hear people like you that are so eloquent and so detailed, which is the best part about your testimony and what you do and the book that you published, is that it gives many of us that understand that this is happening, it gives us all the details that we kind of like a confirmation of what we already knew. So back, you're talking about Ceres. So for anybody that doesn't know Ceres, I think it's the biggest asteroid, right? In our solar system. It's so
in the asteroid belt. Yes.
Yep. Yeah. It's so big that it's big enough to have infrastructure. So can you tell us, if you can, details on the infrastructure on Ceres based on your experience?
For a long time that I was there, I lived in a barracks that was, I describe it like a prison without bars, because it was just mm-hmm. a tight quarters where, you know, there was, imagine a long concrete row building, just like in a prison. And the rooms were, you know, 5 by 10 size, little individual rooms that didn't have doors, no bars, no doors, just an open to the hallway. And then inside there was a cot and a little desk. And it was just full of men, something like 40,000 men lived in that way. And we were slave labor. Most of them were miners and did mining and construction inside the Ceres planetoid. And then others were flight crew, which is what I was. I was assigned to flight. So they were all connected by high-speed trains, very small. So not a large train like you would imagine, like a big Amtrak train that has several cars. Only a couple cars at a time, or even sometimes just one car would come through, and they came every 3 or 4 minutes. There'd be another one. It was like 15 minutes, but it was a 3 or 4 minute cycle. But they were like 15 minutes apart, and they would go to different destinations. So you'd wait for your train.
Kind of like what they have at airports, shuttles, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. And they had, and they were all different. Some of the cars you got into were old and kind of broke down already, you know, and I mean, they had been aged, and some of them were brand new. You got one that was brand new, and it would have new upholstery on the seats and just a nicer, they had handrails and hooks that you'd hold onto. They weren't super high tech, but they were very fast. They were in vacuum. So when the door opened, there was a puff of air, a gush of air that went in. So there was an area that you had to stand back, like yellow painted line on the ground, that you couldn't go. When the train door was opening, you couldn't go past that line because you could get sucked in because there was a vacuum. So the train would come into its own little airlock, close off, the door would open, and there'd be the vacuum would equalize in between the train and the tunnel it was in. And then when everybody got in the train, the doors closed again, and they sucked the air out of that little pocket, and the pocket opened up, and the train went. And they were very fast. So it connected everything. I think the longest train ride I did, so I had to connect, it was cheaper to take the one that connected many times. So I did an interview with somebody in Europe that lives in Amsterdam and said that's exactly what the train system in Europe was like. And I had no idea, I've never been to Europe, but the military had their own train system that went to the larger stops very quickly. The public had a train system that would go to larger stops very quickly, but it was more expensive for the day pass, or, you know, there was money. And then the one that was the cheapest would stop at every stop or every other stop. So it took a long time. So it was a 45 minutes to an hour to get to the other side of the planet on the inside of it. Some places that you would open up to and the train would let you off would just be like a giant hallway. It looked like maybe a shopping mall or an airport sized corridor. And when you're going from to your gate in the airport, it looked like that kind of construction. sometimes when you got out of the train, there were raw materials just laying there. And then sometimes there were large areas, very, very tall caverns, hundreds of feet tall, that had European style buildings built into them, and even older looking buildings with marble columns and things, and shopping areas. And there was a red light district. There was a military base district where I was, you know, it was, I was based basically in a military area complex. And then my train was very quick to go to the hangar where we got on our ships to go. And then I think that from the barracks where we were at, you could take a tunnel and walk. If you didn't have money for a train, you could walk to the nearest town, but it was something like 5 kilometers each way, or, you know, it was a long distance to walk to it. So we never did that. Some guys would, and they would be walking all day long just to go into town and be around people with no money. So I wasn't really attracted to that idea. And it wasn't until later I started to earn a paycheck when I went into engineering, cargo engineering. And then I could afford train rides. So I did go and get to explore a little bit. But because of my status that I was essentially slave labor and wore a suit that identified me as such, and a collar that identified me. So I learned very quickly to not go into public areas. I like to stay out of the public eye because, you know, if somebody got sick, or, you know, somebody knocked over the mayonnaise jar in the aisle, then somebody would go, "Hey, you, clean it up." And I would have to stop what I was doing and go and attend to it. So I put up with a bit of abuse because of my status in that culture. So I learned very quickly not to go into the main, you know, the really ritzy areas for that reason.
Yeah. And back to the, denomination of slave and slave labor. I think a lot of people might have a little trouble with that because it's such a heavy term, but effectively you were a slave in the sense that if you decided one day, "Oh, you know, I want to go back to Earth, I quit," you just can't do it. Period.
No,
there's nothing you can do. And this is what defines slave labor. I mean, you might have been treated well in different ways, maybe, with some respect. No, not at all.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Can you explain this for our audience? Because a lot of people have so much trouble with the concept of slave still happening this day and age, but it's a fact over there. Yeah.
Well, the other thing is when these programs, and these were corporate programs. So, you know, the Germans got up into space very early on in the 20s or 30s, and it was sponsored by the government. The Nazi government quickly took over and got in on the act. Then private corporations got the information and went up, and then other governments like the United States, and then there's a United Nations. There's a conglomerate of many countries around the world that has their own secret space program. But in the early days, when the Germans went up and when the corporations went up, they found that the only thing that they had of any value to trade with people was slave labor, to trade with the extraterrestrials. So they wanted to get up and say, "Look, we need a faster, better spaceship. Can you help us build it?" And ETs that were willing to talk to them, that were not very developed, that were willing to do business, had no interest in human rights or anything. So they said, "Well, what have you got to trade for that?" And the answer was people. They had boots. And so people got traded for whatever reason, medical experiments, slave labor. You know, I could go on. I don't want to make your show dark. So that's how it began. And so they are still trading with ETs. There are ET species that are very advanced, very benevolent. And there are ET species that just see us as vermin, that don't see us as anything special because they're, for whatever reason that they do to justify it. We've seen it through history that people do it to each other. People today nearby us justify feeling better than the other people around them for one reason, stupid reason or another. And the ETs are no different. So in the beginning, it began a system. They systematically got people to be slave labor. And with the technology, it hinges on the technology that they can erase your memory. So when we're talking about taking somebody, I mean, that's basically the nutshell of most abduction ET events. Most ET events, when anybody can describe, you know, "I had a gray in my room," or "I had this happen," or that happened. Even great people with a lot of memory, and they feel like something good happened to them, still have their memories erased. They still don't have any recollection of really what happened. I saw, you know, we saw an ET. I don't know. I woke up at night. There were lights. there were lights flashing, and all of a sudden I saw a gray in my standing in my room, and then I don't remember what happened. Like, that's the typical, I just described like 80% of contact. Yeah. And so by nature, even no matter what the intention is or what the experience was, all ET contact to this point begins with essentially a crime. And that's with erasing your memory, whether you volunteered for it or not. So once you have that ability, imagine corporations having that ability. It's a slippery slope. And then so slave labor just fell hand in hand into that wheelhouse. And then they have to tell, this began back in the 30s, 40s, and 50s when they were doing this systematically. And now they have to tell giant lies to cover up those little lies to save themselves from getting in trouble. And that's really why the secrecy has been perpetuated onto the level that it is. The real reason is because they've had human rights violations within these programs. And they're afraid to come clean because they've all got blood on their hands, because every single buddy that's involved has some form of violation on their hands from what we as a society view as taboo. The other thing is that they're taking children. The ideal age to take people for these programs is a young age, under 18, and they get groomed for programs because you just get better results. They take kids for a few days and train them and put them back. Then they come back a month later and do it again. And they're training kids for this alter ego. And then when they get to a certain age, they take them and they do their 20-year service. Some people can go for 40, and they do a long service for their job that they were trained for, and they're put back. But the bottom line is they're kids. So how can they agree to anything? And how, you know, this is literally our highest crime as a society is to abduct children. It's like the highest crime. And so this is the reason that fuels the secrecy. People are going to have to admit that this has been going on. And that this is actually the practice that they can't let go of because it's what works the best. So there are some things systemically across the board that as a society, disclosure is going to have to swallow. There's some hard pills to swallow. To get one other thing I would add to your question is the reason, the way that they justified slavery on Ceres Colony Corp, the way that they justified it, but as they were taking criminals. So the typical thing is they're taking people that have been convicted of a crime. So they take criminals to do the slave labor and they justify it saying that they deserve it because they were criminals. So this is their punishment. It's their karma. And so there's for some way. And then on top of it, they say, well, they get to live an extra 20 years. And so it's life extension. And that's how they morally justified it. It's the same exact social structure as the Germans had and the Romans had before them. And on. So the Romans did the same thing. You could win your way out of slavery. I was close. If I would have stayed another 10 years, I may have gotten freedom. I may have earned my freedom. But there was a real carrot and stick system in place so that you could earn more freedoms if you behaved and did a good job. So, but it was just unrealistic. So that was the system. And it's hard for people to get their head around that exists today. And not only that, but in a way that's more advanced than we are living at the moment. Sorry, that was a long answer.
No, that was a great answer. I just there's so many things that take place even on Earth, on our surface, that people, you know, they're never on mainstream media. The people never talk about it. People don't want to face it. But we are dealing with situations all across the board that are unbelievable. But they are part of the issues that we have. And I want to touch upon something. I think it's a critical part of the programs out there. And it's a technology that was given by one of the groups that is involved with the Earth process. I call it Protocols of Galactic Interaction. And it is the 20-year-old and back technology, which allows a person, just like it happened to you, allows a person to experience and basically a lifetime of working in different areas in space. And then brought back basically this age regression technology that again sounds unbelievable for many people, but it's an actual technology that was provided. Can you give us a little bit about this, like this experience of going through this, basically living 20 years out there working, having memories, and then age regressing back to zero? And
this is another big thing that people are going to have. I think this is the challenge right now with disclosure, with where we're at. The biggest challenge is to normalize this. We don't have the technology. It's very advanced for where we're at as a society. So people, I don't know why, but people arrogantly think that because we don't have it, that it can't exist. And you know, I look at us as like an older culture, like back in the 1800s compared to us now, they wouldn't believe half of the things they wouldn't believe in airplanes or spaceships or submarines that do what they do, or missiles
or smartphones
or smart. Yeah. A smartphone back in the 1800s would be completely unbelievable. It's for magic, what it can do. Yeah. Yes, absolutely. It'd be in the realm of magic. So this is what we're dealing with when we're trying to disclose these technologies of what they've been using for literally the last 100 years. So they have the ability to take somebody. I believe that there are more than one way to do it. Just because of the other testimonies, people that I've talked to privately that have been through the same thing. I believe that there are several ways to do this, achieve the same results. I believe that the way that I went through it involved cloning. I think that we have a very rudimentary understanding of consciousness and what we really are. I think actually medical science is stunted about it. They say animals don't have a soul, kind of thing. Like that's an actual thing. And which is preposterous to anybody that connects deeply with an animal. But I think that we have a measure of consciousness in us, and it's a scientific thing that can be measured. And it's our awareness, you know, and all the cultures call it different things, chi, whatever, awareness, your soul, your
spirit, whatever,
your spirit, right? On and on and on, all through history. And I think they have a way of diluting it, taking it, splitting it into two. And I think they clone, when I was taken in 82, I think that they created a clone of me. Wow. And it was a vegetable, and they took my chi, my awareness. I like to call it awareness. It just sounds like it's like throwing a blanket over the whole thing.
Yeah.
They took it out of me and put me in that body. And then my body was kept in some kind of stasis or whatever. And I lived the 20 years. And then the other component where you get the 1,000-yard stare with people is the time travel. So they said, you know, time travel is a reality. There are many people that have come forward that worked with CIA programs. There's a lot of evidence and a lot of whistleblowers around just governmental time travel programs, let alone extraterrestrials that have been at it for 1 million years. And in order to travel great distances of space, you must also be able to travel great distances of time forward or backward. And so they take you and you live for 20 years, and then they put you back in time, take your consciousness out and put it back in the original body and send you on your way. And then the memories stay local in the clone body, and you have your original memories that of the body you were taken from are still there. So when you wake up, you have your, it's like nothing happened. Only in my case, I was changed. I was greatly changed. I was a 10-year-old boy on a Thursday, and I did 10-year-old boy things. I had a Stretch Armstrong and Legos, and I had, you know, Hot Wheels and all those things in my room. And when I woke up Friday morning, which for me, the period of 20 years had passed, but I had no memory of, I did no longer had any interest in my Hot Wheels or my Stretch Armstrong. I was 10, and this was in the 80s, so I didn't have internet or any kind of access to any pornography or anything like that. And all of a sudden I was attracted, because I had been 30 years old the day before, and all of a sudden I was attracted to adult females. And so I went on, and I felt the passage of time. I went downstairs. I was shocked to be in my house. And my mom, I gave her a big hug. I haven't seen you in forever. I'm so happy to be home. They were talking to me like, don't be crazy, Tony. You know, I went to school that day. I had no memory. I got lost on my way to my class. And when I went to the bathroom later in the afternoon, I didn't know where the bathroom was. The whole class laughed at me. I raised my hand. Where's the bathroom at? And it wasn't a big school, confusing school. It was like a B class school. And so the residual effects stayed with me. And forever after that, like my relationship with my parents changed. My dad would say, man, what's something changed about you? I want my son back. You know, like you're not even any fun anymore. And because I was changed, I had adult tendencies, even though I was just still a boy. And, there was definitely side effects from what happened, and they stayed with me. And it wasn't until much later in life when I learned about the tech, like I had bleed through memories that didn't make any sense. There were times I remembered a great deal of what happened, but I thought, when could that have happened? That doesn't make any sense. You know, I had chronological memory of my entire life in Michigan from start where I was. And so there was no time when I could have been taken. It was the time travel aspect, the loop of it, that really aided in the memories not coming back, because you just don't accept it. And then once I learned about the 20 and back tech, I accepted those memories, and then they all came back. I'm like, oh my God, that happened. Oh my God. And so this is a phenomenon. This is a real technology. And you got to think, it's very valuable. I believe it's one of the first things that they trade. So when your government gets into space and makes contact with spacefaring ETs and they go, can you give us some advanced technology here? We'll give you this or whatever. We'll do this for you. One of the first things they trade is the 20 and back technology, because it's a universal thing. It works for all most sentient species, and it has rules that come with it, and they get to see who's going to abuse it. And we certainly have abused it. We certainly have abused the technology. Absolutely have.
Yeah. And back to the 20 year and back program, you are not entirely certain how it works. It could have been, for example, the technology is able to tap into your cells and then regress your cells. So your body would actually, like in a movie, like magic, you know, your body would just go back. Yeah.
Right. So that process, I did go through that process. I did go through a process where they immobilized me for, it felt like months, but I had no idea what I had lost track of time. Basically they put me on a table and put a barrier around me, a black foam barrier. And they gave me shots that wouldn't let my muscles move, inhibitors. All through my body. It's like I'm still afraid of needles. But every day they would come, and these are gray ETs, would come at a certain time of day and just give me dozens of injections. And the chemical kept me from moving, so that while the process was happening, that I was being age regressed or what, I don't really understand why. The reason I come up with the cloning is because of the aspect of the memories. Because when I was taken and I went into the program, the very first procedure they did, they put me somehow, and I had amnesia. I had no, day one of the program, I had no memory of my mom or dad or anybody. I really had a hard time remembering how to speak English. It took me a couple of days to get my speech back, and I had no memory of where I'd come from. And I began the training into the program. I was 10 years old. And then I lived for 20 years and straight through. So, and I experienced that 20 years first. So that's important. I think that's a detail that may come in handy later. I experienced that first. It's not like I experienced my life and went back and forth, or, you know, felt like there were two of me at once. I lived those 20 years first and then went back to my life and then lived those 20 years in my personal life again. But at the end of it all, when they took me back, I feel the very last step that they put me in something that felt like they incinerated me. They rolled me on a cot. Like when they were done with their program, they rolled me on into a, it was the same. There was no flames, but it looked the same as a crematory. Like when they put a body where it gets cremated, it was a little booth like that. Like they rolled me in off a stretcher into that. And I remember it felt like I was being incinerated. I felt like golf ball size pains coming up my legs, like effervescing up my legs to my body. And I screamed. And the next thing I remember, I was in my 10-year-old body with them going through the rest of the memory erasing process. And I had my memories back. I had no memories of being on Ceres, no memories of the 20 years. I immediately had all my memories back of mom and dad, and where I just, if to me, it was the same abduction experience as when I was taken. So you get what I'm saying? Like that gap of time. So yes, I don't know how it happened, but I experienced it like that. So I like to share it because maybe it's going to be information that comes in handy for somebody in the future. But that's kind of exactly how I remember it, is that, you know, they rolled me into a thing and I felt like I got incinerated, and I woke up in my 10-year-old body with my original memories back and the memories of my service gone. And so it seems like, you know, being in a separate clone body during that time explains a lot, but that may not be the case. You know, there may be other things like the age regression part of it. And that's why I say that there's probably definitely many ways to do the same thing, to achieve the same result. There's more than one way for this technology to work, for them to achieve the life extension like that.
Yeah. And I just want to alert the audience and anybody listening that, well, you might agree that we're dealing, when you're talking about what happened to you, it's because, we are dealing with groups of extraterrestrials that, although they have very advanced technology, they have what we could call a lower consciousness or a similar consciousness to Earth. and that's the reason morality. Why this stuff happens. Yeah. Like, because again, you know, I want to hear your thoughts real quick on the idea that, well, that's just a very small part of the whole gamut of extraterrestrial life.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So people, we have been greatly conditioned. We have been programmed by our media over the course of our entire life to believe a few important lies. Firstly, we believe that every good guy in every story is always a good guy and always does the right thing. And we believe that every bad guy is always the bad guy and always does the wrong thing. And that's not reality. Extraterrestrial civilizations are not always bad guys and always good guys. They have their own interests. Some people hate people from the United States and think the United States is evil. And some people don't and love the United States. And people inside the United States are a mixture, depending on when you catch them on their day. People that have had great trauma and pain growing up do bad things. People that have had a loving, nurturing existence tend to grow up and be loving and nurturing. And ETs are exactly the same. That being said, there are many ETs that are more advanced than us. So we are not the smartest, most advanced life form that's going to grace the cosmos. There are some that are millions of years ahead of us. There are ETs that have profound mental abilities and spiritual abilities, and they regard us with the same, they afford us the same rights that we do our animals, that we do cows or chickens or animals. So people are very loving to animals, but cows and chicken and our food supply is treated like a food supply. And so we are a resource to some extraterrestrials. So the other big, huge lie on top of the good and bad is that there's only a few extraterrestrials. There's only 80 of them out there. There's only 80 or 90. And if we did get into space, we couldn't get to the other side of the galaxy. Like in Star Trek, you can't get there. You take you 80 years at light speed. So we're only going to be in this neighborhood of the universe, and that we only have access to so many extraterrestrials. So we've got the good guys on this side and the bad guys on this side and a few in the gray area. So that's not the case. The case is that the Ceres Colony Corporation and the ships that I was working on could go anywhere in the galaxy in a very short time and be home the same day. And they could use natural portals and access something like 18 to 20 other galaxies and find a natural portal in those and go to another 18 or 20 galaxies. At this point, just in those numbers, we have trillions of stars, and something like 7 out of 10 stars has an Earth around it with a civilization. So not all of them spacefaring, but many of them are spacefaring. So we're talking about not just 80 or 90 species that we can trade with or empires. We're talking about trillions of species, separate species that all have their own tendencies, their own cultures, their own morals, their own things that they require to be happy, and that are much different than us and much the same as us. And so when you talk about ETs, people go, they want to get, when I talk about negative ETs and what I experienced by them, they want to throw a blanket and say, wow, getting in space is scary. We're, you know, yeah. But the truth is, nature extends beyond the sky. And it's just like in the forest, you may come across a bear and you may come across a fuzzy animal. And space and the extraterrestrial civilizations that are out there, the worlds that are out there, are the exact same way. You may come across some that are more predatorial, and you may come across some that you'll get along with just great. That's not a good or bad thing. It's nature. It's just nature. It keeps going.
Yeah. And just to follow along that thought of nature, one of the things that I share on Squirrels Know, and I want to hear your thoughts about it or your feelings about it, is that, well, again, we live in a, what we could consider a lower dimensional reality system here on Earth. And we are used to this. We're used to animals in the forest eating other animals, what you said, predator and prey. But the truth is that, and I definitely want to hear and feel your feelings about this, is that in the higher dimensions, the higher you go in awareness and consciousness and evolution, if you want to call it evolutions, or the closer you are to Godhead, to universal source, the less of these things that we experience here become possible. So for example, on a higher dimensional society, for example, the societies that monitor the use of the 20-year and back technology, for example, those people are completely outside the scope of where we are. And in those levels, the concept of predator and prey, it just doesn't happen. So my point, I say this just to maybe trigger in people the idea that creation is not just this struggle that we have here as a colony of this massive predatorial super empire that we all know about. You want, let me hear your feelings about this.
That's a great thing. Great question and a great point. I'm a big fan of Law of One, and I feel that it pretty much hits the nail on the head about a lot when you're talking about levels of species, the densities, you know, for that is the word they call it. I like to say right back to my favorite, my keyword is awareness, the level of awareness that a being has. So when they had, the Germans had classified extraterrestrial species, it was based on the amount of data that they could communicate. So we have a few hundred thousand words that humans use most of the time, and that's the amount of data we communicate with each other. So the next level up was a metahuman, which becomes telepathic, and there are more words, you know, 500,000 to 1,000,000 words that they communicate, words that begin to enunciate circumstances. You know, rather than we have to put a bunch of words together to enunciate a circumstance, they have one quick word that can enunciate an entire circumstance. And then, you know, it becomes telepathic and graphic. And so giant, large amounts of data that, so instead of describing things with words, I can see the entire hour. You know, I can say, like, if I said, you know, what was your morning like? I would see the entire week. Your answer would be showing me all of the data from the entire week in a second. So these are, they were uber humans or uber, people. And then they had Ultra, there was a few others. But so this was the Ceres Colony Corporation scale of consciousness, of existence. So the Law of One does it in densities. So we're a third density, then the fourth density would be somebody that has 500,000 to 1,000,000 words. And then a fifth density has things, somebody that communicates with a great deal of data, with visual data. And then a sixth density, even more so. So what we were aware of is that something that would be around a sixth density no longer needed technology as in the way that we do, that there is this hard ceiling in reality on technology and how many things you can invent to do things for you before you can't invent anything else again. And manipulation of the hologram that we're in is completely mental, that we're basically in a consciousness, like the Hermetic principle, that we're in a quantum hologram that is an agreed construct of all of our subconsciouses together, and that the fabric of reality is basically based on consciousness, so that a certain level of density of consciousness can alter reality. So sixth density and above could alter matter with their minds. So this is somebody that could turn a coffee cup into a TV remote control with just the pot. So there's no... And us as lower beings can do it with technology, but at that level, there's a hard, like I said, there's a hard ceiling where it has to be consciousness. And at that point, there is no more, like you said, struggle. There is a point, they do struggle. There is still a struggle. They still are faced with their challenges, and they made it known. What they were, I don't know. But there were times when we had beings that would be considered a fifth or sixth density being visiting the Ceres Colony Corp. And we, you know, it was always a buzz, like a rock star being on on the world. But they had their own problems, and they weren't, life, it wasn't hunky dory. They didn't have it. They weren't, they weren't done yet, put it that way. So I guess at a much higher level, there is a point where they connect to the universal consciousness, which is like what we would call God. And they get direct answers. So there's a point where they ask God a question and they get a direct answer. So there is a level of consciousness that does achieve, that does get that high. We still have a long way to go. That's what I mean. That's another one of the lies that we've been perpetuating, is we're the top of the food chain, we're as good as it gets. And we have a long way to go. And the thing is, what that does is that stunts people from aspiring to be any better. And the only thing we really aspire to is to get more stuff. That's why people are so greedy, and they don't mind screwing people over, because they think that we're at the top of it all. And you don't realize that when you victimize other people to get ahead in life, that you're actually victimizing yourself. And so that's where we're at. That's why we're kind of stuck in that the wool is pulled over our eyes. And disclosure, one of the great things that I'm excited about, there are two things that I really think that mankind is going to be needs right now, even more so than the med beds. Everybody's hung up on the med beds, but we need access to the internet, to a galactic internet, so that we can begin to research the histories and the lifestyles of other species. So that'll be very eye-opening, and we will grow up very quickly when that happens. And number two, we'll aspire to be like them. We'll start to see what advanced species are like, and we will begin to aspire to be like them. And we will stop seeing each other as strangers and realize that we're a human family. And people will be inspired to be better. Because right now, you're not the only inspiration they feed us is to be richer and to have more possessions. But they don't really inspire you to be a better person or to ascend and make your consciousness grow so that when you die, you're born in a better way. You know, the spirituality is very stunted, and they've actually made a stigma around spirituality to where when you speak about it, you're like hokey. And so once we see other species that are very advanced, I'm not talking about just with spaceships. I mean, very advanced species, like spiritually advanced. Yes. And ones that don't need technology anymore. They can travel vast distances instantly, mentally. Once we see how that is, we're going to aspire to be like that. And a few generations of that information is going to change the landscape of the entire Earth immediately for the better.
Oh, wow. That's a great thought, Tony. That's exactly what I was shooting for. And you know, one of the things that we do that I share on Squirrels Know is that, well, Earth, I think I mentioned that before, Earth has been a manufacturer environment since before the dinosaurs, to be, again, you know, this environment of predator and prey. And this is not how things take place naturally throughout the galaxies. And it's a bit of an experiment here. This galaxy is kind of unique. Absolute free will has been granted. And now we have this empire that has taken control of Earth for a long time, the reps. And what are your thoughts on this?
Well, to a certain extent, the way that we live, the way that we see nature happen is exactly what happens. It's exactly right. You know, life basically, energy basically gets used. So life uses life, and it's a form of energy. So, you know, kind of like it gets into the, you know, the vegan versus the meat eater thing. And really, so there are animals that are purely meat eaters, and they can't help it. That's just what they are. But they eat less. And then when you look at herbivores that don't eat meat at all, they eat constantly. It's the same amount of life intake. So, you know, it's the form of nature. Life feeds on life at this point, at where we're at. And even on the higher levels, it does so, something like that too. And that's really, in a way, what's happening is the next few modalities of consciousness are controlling the Earth right now. That's really what it is. We're pointing the finger at each other down here for the stupid things that go on. These are ETs that are pulling the strings behind the scenes. And it's very easy for them to do with technology from millions of years in the future. It's very easy to come down here and control us. If we wanted to control a tribe in Brazil that's been uncontacted, we wanted to go and abduct them and interact with their day-to-day life and change their way without them knowing it. We have the technology to do that now. Our special forces could go and do that. And ETs have been doing that to us all along. So it's not a bad thing. Nature, the way that it is, like you said, like it's not a bad thing. It's the natural progression of things. Like I believe that you exist and you know, the animals exist and they learn things and they long for other things and they grow naturally until they become a higher consciousness. And we are going to live our several lives to settle our things and evolve to be a higher consciousness. And the thing is, the world is getting to the point where it can host, and we're going to move as a whole into the next level together. And so we're right on that cusp of that in this lifetime, which is, I mean, in this generation, really, we could get a disclosure, and that whole process can begin for us to go from being a very unenlightened third density existence to a beginning of a fourth density existence, you know, across the board. So this is a very exciting time when you think about it. It's a natural thing. I kind of get what you're saying, but like I said, nature is like that everywhere you go, where life kind of feeds on life until you get to a certain level of spirituality. And I think it's still about energy consumption. And then they rely on us. But we are important to the higher developed beings. We are important because we're numerous, and we actually do a lot of things. So they rely on us. Like I said, the same way that we rely, and it's not nowadays. Nowadays we have a lot of synthetic things, but early on, hundreds of years ago, we relied on animals for everything. literally everything. And so at a certain level of the next few levels of being, they rely on us for everything. So, I mean, that's just, it's like the pecking order. So I don't know. I don't feel it's a hopeless thing. I just don't.
Oh, definitely not hopeless. Yeah. I just, triggering people's minds with the thought of a higher dimensional society or higher dimensional space time and how different it would be from our space time of struggle and well, decay and all of this stuff that we're used to as natural. It's beautiful, but it's, yeah.
Well, the thing is, I think that we're being siphoned off. So when you look at like money is really basically an exchange of energy. Money works exactly like, you know, when they look at economics for a nation, the same rules of electronics apply to finances. So they have capacitors and like, it's the same thing. Like when they build businesses in a when a town is set up, it's set up like an electronical device and money flows through it the same way as electricity does. That's how they manage it from, you know, the government standpoint and the banks. They understand that money, the way that people trade money, works exactly like electricity does. That being said, we've been siphoned off by, like I said, other higher beings, other species. And they've been doing it for all of, you know, when you look back at history, how many ancient species or cultures, we're saying so much that I'm losing the words. How many ancient cultures gave their gold to their gods? They were mining gold because they were in loincloths and they were in the Stone Ages, but they were mining gold as tribute to their gods. What do you think was really going on there?
Yeah.
They were giving gold. Right? Yes. It's obvious to us now, but to them, they, like you said, they had gods coming down with smartphones and it was magic and telepathic ability they had Neuralink chips. And so they were coming down and interacting with them and putting these people to task to work and mine their gold for them. And back then I'm sure it was a lot easier than it is today. There was more gold towards the surface. We're still getting that. That's still what's going on. And that's why we're struggling so much, because sometimes they come through and they take a great deal more than they should. And so our resources, our money, the electricity, our energy is not benefiting us. It's benefiting other parasitic ETs that are taking our resources and organizations. Now it's not just ETs, it's the space programs, the secret space programs that have moved off world, colonies come down. So when I was in cargo engineering on Ceres, we would come and pick up goods at Diego Garcia in the middle of the night. They'd lock the base down and we would pick up whatever we needed. If we needed a Jeep, there would be Jeeps there and we would load the whole ship up and go. And we didn't pay for it. We just took it. It was Black program funded. And that money is coming out of our pockets. So that's really what's going on, is that if we needed a ship full of gold, we would come down and get a ship full of gold. And the taxpayer, or, you know, it's not even taxpayer, it's a globally mankind would pick up the tab, because we did the work for it, where we were enslaved by these programs, and we still are. That's what's going on.
You know, back to your job, you said Diego Garcia, that's a place in the Pacific, right? Is that a military base?
In the Indian Ocean.
An island. Yeah. Oh, in the Indian Ocean. Okay.
So the reason that the memory came through, mm-hmm, for the Diego Garcia was because one day we were on our way there. On the manifest of our stops, we said, man, it's been a long day. Where are we going next? And I said, Diego Garcia's next stop. And then we're going back to Ceres, right? Long day. Guys working. He said, man, that's a stupid name. You know, Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean. And I said, yeah, it's a Spanish name in the Indian Ocean with an American airbase. And somebody came from the other side and said, no, that's an Italian name. It's an Italian first name and a Spanish second name in the Indian Ocean for an American airbase in the Indian Ocean. And then somebody came again later and said, we're going to pick up Russian cargo off a Chinese boat and an American airbase that's got an Italian first name and a Spanish second name for some Germans in the Indian Ocean. And we would just build on that. That was our running joke every time we went back there. And so I never forgot that. And we did. That was our main port to take good anytime we needed raw materials or any kind of tech that was made. We picked up nuclear missiles. We picked up an LCAC, a Marine hovercraft, a troop transport hovercraft we took. And there were two American officers, and we'd ride the spider. We had something called a spider, like an elevator that came down from the ship, and it had eight cables that came down. So we called it the spider, and you'd ride it down, and we could get on the deck. And a couple times I would go down on the deck there, and I signed for the manifest. There was a signature for the Americans. And he said, "You guys' tab is getting big. You guys are starting to get a big tab with us." And I said, "Okay, I'll let them know." So then I went back up, and the next morning, so I went to the mission briefings in the morning, and at the end of the mission briefing the following morning, "Does anybody need to add anything?" And I raised my hand and I said, "I signed for the cargo at Diego Garcia last night. And he said that the officer said that our tab is getting high, that there's a purchase agreement that needs to get paid, which is getting a high tab." And the entire command crew burst into laughter and cried laughing. They were crying laughing about it. They laughed and laughed and laughed because there is no tab, because they don't pay a dime for any of that stuff. The Americans were fooled into thinking that there's some kind of bank account, the transaction that happens. But the reality is that whatever the Ceres Colony Corporation orders from Diego Garcia or from the military, they just come down and get it. That's part of the treaty, however it's worked out. So it's free stuff for them to trade with ETs. So if you think about that resource alone, how valuable that is and what it would cost us as a society, like, that's where the struggle is coming from. We're in an economic system where it's like musical chairs. And every time there's a reset, which we are about to have a big recession, every time that happens, there are people stuck without a chair. And so the people that are causing it to happen profit from this, and they can make all of those numbers disappear of all the things that have gone, you know, into the black programs, the money that's disappeared and gone into space. They can make that disappear. So that's kind of where we're at today.
Yeah, this terribly, terribly outdated global financial system that we have had for so long, with these banking conglomerates controlling everything. And back to that point, you mentioned back on Ceres, and I guess, you know, throughout the solar system, there is a monetary system. I'm sure it's not dollars. Can you explain what that
is? We called them francs. There are ETs that use no money, and we were aware that they would visit, and we were always jealous because they got an unlimited spending amount. So, but they didn't use money at all. So it was a trade issue, and it was like a diplomatic issue. So they had a free, basically, tab to walk around. But what we found is that they were not wasteful at all. People that came from those cultures didn't go on a shopping spree when they had a free tab. They would just get the things they needed. There were francs. There was a digital, like a facial recognition. Like, instead of your bank card, everything had facial recognition, and you could give an okay to take the money out of your account and pay for things by just using your face. There was cryptocurrency. There were several accounts. And there was cash. There was a paper money, and that's what I dealt in, because you had to pay a monthly fee for the facial recognition, and I didn't make that kind of money, so I just carried cash, and I was trying to save up money. But it was a trade window, so it wasn't a bank. It was the military. We called it the trade window, and at the very end of the hangar, and the hangar was huge, 19 miles, maybe bigger than that. Big. It was a long, a very huge hangar bay that was full of spaceships. And at the very end of it, we'd walk, and there was you'd go up marble steps to a revolving doors, and then you'd go through, and it looked like a train station. You know, it looked like the old ones. Like, I've been in a Greyhound bus station once in, where was that, in Cleveland, and it looked just like that. It was all the really tiled, like from the 20s. 20s or 30s kind of construction, and it looked just like that on Ceres. And there were windows, and you would go up to the trade window, and not only did they trade money or manage money, but if you were somebody visiting from a spacecraft from another species, you could go. And there, I did stand in line with extraterrestrials there going to get cash my check. You could come and say, "Look, I've got 5 tons of this kind of ore. What can I get for it? I'd like to leverage it or borrow it." And they would make the trade right there. It was a trade window. It wasn't a bank, but it did banking for us. So that's where I went and got paid. And that's how their system worked. So trade is everything. And, you know, extraterrestrials, like I said, even though we look at our money system because it's very oppressive. So we're saying, how can they do that? Our money system is just being, like I said, being siphoned off at the top. It would work if we weren't so under heel. You know what I mean? Like if we were really just out, we're taking care of ourselves with our money system, people could prosper greatly if we weren't taxed to oblivion. And that, you know, we're obviously seeing the United States being fleeced right now. The United States is being fleeced through something called the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement. And we're being robbed blind by the trillions of dollars, even though they've hidden it now that it's passed. Like you can't follow what it's going, but we're losing trillions and trillions of dollars to the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement. So is Australia. So the United States and Australia are the big losers. And infrastructure is being built all through Malaysia and Vietnam and China, all up that side. That's where all our lumber is going. That's where the baby milk's going. That's where everything's going. They're getting what it is China, rather than having the United States as its primary market, is using the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement to build infrastructure throughout Asia to create its market there so that it's not dependent on the United States anymore. That's really what's going on. And, you know, and by and large, I think it's a good thing. It's just that the United States is getting fleeced. So how long can we keep it up? I don't know. And it's kind of alarming to see how bad our economy is going to be doing in the near future because of what's going on, because of the policies that are going on. But if our policies cared about us, our money system would work great and people would prosper, you know, and keep everybody kind of busy. The thing is, we can't make it out of one or two generations before they cull the money, the fruits of our labor, so that, you know, if you were a couple of generations in and everybody owned everything, then the kids would have a much easier time and actually experience real freedom. We just haven't had it since 1913. So I'm on a big rant here, man. I'm sorry,
yeah,
guys.
Yeah. No. 1913. That's when the Federal Reserve was created. Yeah. No, I love that you're going into these details about not only what's happened in the solar system and all the fascinating stuff for many people, not, for you and I and those like us, it's just normal stuff. But for other people, it's just, oh my God, it's so fascinating.
Well, it's not normal, but it's a different perspective. That's all it is. I have a different perspective. I'm not anybody, yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not a lawyer. I just have a different perspective on things. And so that's kind of the bulk of my show. What I do is just tell my things appear differently to me because I have memories of being in space, of living in Ceres colony. So political things look different to me and global things look different. It just looks different to me because of my life experience.
Well, I think it's an excellent thing that you have that outside perspective because you have these memories of that. You have seen what's happening out there with the corporate, all this corporate power of this private interest that nobody knows about and how they control so much money, how they have all these slave trade, slave labor, which is something that is unthinkable for most of us, and it's actually taking place. So your perspective is really important. I really appreciate it. Yeah, to follow up on what you just said about what's happening to people is that, well, like you said, people are not free. The majority of people are they're forced to work 9 to 5. They're forced to work to a point where they're too tired to even think about other things and dream and think about the wonders of the universe. So, but back to your experience, you said that you were in line at the trade window with some people that were not from Earth. So that part is just great. Can you tell us about the extraterrestrial groups that you have interacted with? And I'm guessing some of those will be very, even if they're not human like us, mammals maybe, but they probably have humor and kind of like what we consider being human. Just talk to us about the extraterrestrial groups that you have interacted with
and personality. So in general, I was directed, ordered to not interact with non-humans. So while I was out and about and during the base on my time off, in my free time, when I was out in the base and I saw a non-human, I was ordered to not interact with them. That being said, I still sat in the room and rode on the train and stood in line against them, you know, not super often, but pretty often. I remember seeing one of the taller reptilians. They were not on Ceres colony very often. So when they were, they stood out. It was kind of like they're, you know, seeing somebody famous, you know, like they're seeing something very out of the ordinary, somebody you don't see. Like if you live in a culture where there's no white people, and then all of a sudden there's a white person there, you would kind of look at, you would remember that. You get what I'm saying? It would stand out. And so reptilians were like that on Ceres Colony. I saw one that was a laborer, and he was like orange, basically. And I thought they were beautiful. I thought it was a beautiful life form. It was a male. I mean, I wasn't attracted to it or something, but I'm just saying, like, his appearance, I thought it was beautiful. They had very small scales and a great deal of detail in his face. The biggest thing, and I said this, I have a show, Talks with Tony, a Patreon show, and then we do a group. There's a group where we meet every couple of weeks. And one of the things that dawned on me, somebody, and I do a Q&A on there, like a group questions and answers. And for the first time, somebody asked me, describe what they looked like. And I get that question a lot, right? And what I realize is that Hollywood, whenever Hollywood portrays an extraterrestrial, they all look exactly alike. If you get what I'm saying. And if Hollywood shows five extraterrestrials standing in a room for whatever story, they're all looking alike. They might be a little taller or whatever, but they all look exactly alike. That's not the reality. The reality is that they have different faces and you can tell them apart the same way that you can tell us apart. Like, we don't look alike. And even though we're the exact same thing. When people are the exact same thing, we look radically different. The ETs were the exact same way. Every ET race that I saw, they looked, you could tell them apart. They don't look alike in the face. That's one of the things, because of the order of not interacting with them, or maybe just because I didn't care. I always get asked, like, how many ETs did you see on Sirius? And I really didn't make note of it. When I would see, like I said, the reptilian stood out. There was a, I want to say an Arcturian, but I'm wrong. I really honestly don't remember the name. I did know the name at the time. I think it's from somewhere farther away than we are aware of. I think it's from a star that had a name that we as on Earth don't have a name for. But she was a tall, 10 foot tall, dark blue woman, bald. And she had very advanced looking clothes on, and she had a holographic jewelry. Like, it was their jewelry that was holographic, and it would show like sparkles in between you and them, like in 3D. It was a part of their jewelry. And when you looked at her, you could see them. All the air would fill with all kinds of like a sparkle. And when you looked away, you didn't see it anymore. So it was being projected off her like a form of jewelry. But she was a very advanced being, and we were told that they were on the planet, they were on the world, and that we might see them and then not interact with them. And she was sitting on a train when I walked on. The doors open and I walked in a train, and she was sitting right there across from me and looked up at me and smiled. And it was like seeing a unicorn. It was an absolutely religious experience for me. It was. Yeah. And then somebody quickly was like, hey, come on, get back here. Don't sit there. Cause I wanted to interact. I wanted to speak to her. So badly. It's like seeing a movie star or something. Like, I really wanted to interact badly, but I was under orders and there were people there witnessing it. So I would have definitely gotten in trouble. And so I went to the back of the chain, but it was a magical experience to see somebody like that. There were species that were living there. I call them the Ultruans, though I'm probably wrong about the name, but they were very humanoid looking, but they had different proportions and they had elongated skulls. They were usually about 7 to 8 feet tall, and they had long straight hair they had all different colored hair, like their hairs, even the men. I don't know if they were dyeing their hair, if it was a genetic thing, but I think they'd dye their hair different colors, and that was a part of their culture. But they always had straight long hair, like very, very straight thin hair. And they did, for the most part, ship engines. They would work on the engines of the craft that were in the hangar. Like, that's where I would see them at, and out in the colony. There was quite a bit of them that were living on Ceres Colony at the time. To keep going, another thing is that I will say this, that on Ceres Colony, most of the ETs that were visiting us were humans. Mm-hmm. They were humans. From either elsewhere in the solar system, another base, or elsewhere on other worlds. Like, the human, exactly like we are, exactly like you would look in the mirror and see yourself. Humans like us live on many planets throughout the cosmos. We're well proliferated into space, where there are many worlds like the Earth that has humans on it. And many of them that are post-disclosure and are already kind of where we want to be. So it is possible. We're in a contested part of the galaxy. We're in a very We're in a prime piece of real estate where we're at, and we'll see. But disclosures, I believe it's right around the corner.
Yeah, I agree. This galaxy has been through a lot, but that's a whole different story. So I know that you have in your book, you share everything, and I know that there are really bad memories that we don't have to go into right now, when you were a child and what happened. But what about if you can give us your best memory that you can remember of all your time, either on Sirius or in any spaceship doing cargo work or anything, your best memory?
Well, I mean, I fell in love up there. I had a girlfriend, and we were madly in love with each other. It was a beautiful thing. So there was a time because of that, you know, like, and, you know, everybody, I hope, goes through this, is that when you meet somebody and you find somebody that is, you know, you're going to have a relationship with, like, somebody that it all works. You try to date and it doesn't work, and you try to date and it doesn't work, and then you finally meet somebody and it works. And so I know everybody kind of knows what I'm talking about when I say that you have a few weeks or a few months there where you kind of just kind of skip on air, where you're happy. And so that's what I had. I had a few months of that where I was just, nothing got me down. I didn't have a bad day because I had somebody that I could. And for me, for what I had gone through, if you read the book, I mean, there were long periods of time I was very lonely. I had no friends or nothing. I was just a worker. And so for me, that was a huge accomplishment to have to meet somebody like that and to have a partner, you know, that was a big deal to me in that time. So that was that was one of the best things that happened to me. Even though it ended sadly, and I really never got to say goodbye to her. I was demoted and lost my ability to go visit her. And so it was kind of sad how it ended. We kind of ended, and the end of my 20 years, you know, ended just, you know, 6 to 8 months before I was supposed to go home. It was like I lost the ability to see her again. So it was kind of, and I think that that's what really fueled my desire to remember, to not be deleted. Like, yeah, because I was in the height of that. We were in the height of our, who knows, you know, like I could have moved in with her and we would have broke up a couple of years later. Who, you know what I'm saying? Like, relationships have a peak and kind of, you know, ebb and flow. And so, but we were at the peak of our, you know, time together. And then we were separated artificially, you know what I'm saying? Like pulled apart from each other. So I think that that's really what I was trying to remember. And I kept telling myself, I'm going to remember her. I'm going to remember this. I'm going to remember. And I didn't want my memories erased. And I think that that's what happened. And a few other, and I can't name drop because they've since stepped out of the public eye. But other guys that I've talked to, they got their memories back. They said, you know, I think it's the same thing. I think right at the end, I got a girlfriend and I didn't want to forget her. And I wanted to find her down here. And that, I think that's why I remember.
Wow. So love is at the core of everything, right?
Well, you know what I'm saying? Like it's a very driving, motivating thing. Like, think about what we do. Well, the things we do for love are drastic. I mean, everybody is. I like it when people say, I don't need anybody. I'm fine by myself. I'm happy. Those are the people that are the most drastic thing. When they get a chance to be with somebody, they'll cross fire. They'll walk through fire if they get a chance. So everybody is pretty well motivated by their heart and their libido, you know? And so if you find somebody that can settle the, you know what I'm saying, to satisfy your heart and your libido and your mind and soul like that, then it's the most motivating thing, put it that way.
And was she an Earth human, a fellow worker, or?
Yeah. She was a slave like I was. That's right. She was a slave. Yeah. It's in the book.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. You know, and I like to say that a lot of the book, you know what I mean? It sounds like I'm kind of, you know, belly aching, but on one hand it's evidence. And on the other hand, it's like, people need to know what goes on, what, you know, the slippery slope. Like I said, if everybody listening here, if I gave you a device that let you erase people's memory and another device that let you put them into a hypnotic state where you could do whatever you want to them, how long would it be before you did something immoral? Not long, I would think. You know, everybody wants to act like they'd be very moral, but really, after a while, it would be the same thing where you would get the first thing that would be exciting would get boring, and you try something else, and that would get exciting and then boring, and you would keep incrementally upping, and then pretty soon there would be great abuses that happen. And that's what's happened. That's exactly what's happened. The military got this ability, and it began. And not only the military, but the Nazis got these abilities, and they've industrialized it. And so that's really where what's going on up there. So that's why the book is as candid as it is, because people need to understand what's been going on a large scale and what's been motivating it. So there's a lot, the book carries, has a lot of it. And believe it or not, there's a lot of things that got cut out of the book. The very end of it, I barnstormed it. There's a lot about series that I just couldn't get in the book because I had a real now or never moment. Like, I'm either going to finish this book and get it out, or I'm never going to finish it. I worked on it something like 6 years, and it's not a, people are just literally inhaling the book. Like, when it first came out, people read it in 2-3 days, two sittings, and people are just blowing right through the book. And it's like, I put a lot of work into it. But there's a lot missing because, you know, like a painting, I could have worked on it. I could still be working on it. It was my fear at the end. Like, look, something bad's going to happen to me and it's not going to come out, or I'm going to work on it and it's never going to come out and I'll lose it. So I just had to get it done and get it out. And it was number one. I'll brag about it. It was number one for 6 weeks. It was bestseller, and it still is selling pretty good. I think it's a good book for people in the future. I think at some point post-disclosure in the future, the information in the book is going to come in, be important to people in the future as a historical account. The other thing that motivated me to write the book was I was doing interviews, and I always thought, you know, I was into the book and I'd put it away because it was very difficult to write. I had to relive those things. Writing it makes you relive the emotions. It's profound. But I was doing YouTube interviews, and I still do all the time. And I have my own channel. You know what I mean? There are hundreds and hundreds, probably 1,000 hours of me telling this story. And up until the end of 2020, I had faith in that. But then I looked on YouTube and more than half of them are scrubbed. So my interviews, my information can 100% just be deleted by the powers that be. And I never thought that would happen. We thought we lived in America, but you can't say whatever you want anymore. Especially the big tech, they can just delete whatever they want, and they can manipulate and make it sound like it's hate speech or whatever. So when I started seeing a lot of my interviews disappear, and I thought, whoa, some of them are really good. Some of them I was proud of because it did a great job of describing everything from start to finish. And it made sense for people that didn't understand. And when those interviews began to disappear, I thought, man, I got to get the book out. And so I really double timed it and got the book done. That was a big motivator.
Okay, so can you tell the audience, where to find your book? Is on Amazon and your website?
Yeah, it's Patreon/TalksWithTony is my channel. And I got like 75 episodes up there. I have 3 tiers. The third tier is a group that meets, and we're actually doing work based off a CIA document and off the early Project Growflame that I was in, if anybody's interested in that. But I cap it off at like 35 people. I think there's 28 in there right now. It's like I want to keep it small, but... And then tier two has a questions and answers session every month. So people can come on, watch the episodes, and then come on and we do a Zoom call, and they get to do a live, they can ask me anything they want. And those are great. They get brutal. Sometimes those are honestly, that's like my toughest questions come into that group in the form of that tier two. And then tier one is only like $5 a month, and it's all the episodes, 75. And I get an episode out every couple of weeks. I've had a really great list of guests on there, but it's on Patreon because it's harder to delete. So there's this $5 paywall so that my information doesn't get reported by troll. It doesn't get trolled. Trolls don't want to pay. And so that's why it went behind the paywall. It's not because I'm trying to squeeze dollars out of it. My website is tonyrodriguez.com with an S. Everybody always puts a Z on the end, but it's tonyrodriguez.com. And the book is called Ceres, C-E-R-E-S, the planetoid Ceres. Ceres Colony Cavalier is the name of the book. And it's on Amazon. It used to, in the beginning, you couldn't Google it on Amazon. You know, you had to go and you had to click books You couldn't just put in the Amazon prompt. You had to go into the books tab and then put it in there, and it would come up. But now I think it comes up like it's had enough hits to where and enough reviews. I think there are over 300. The reviews are great. I'm so proud of the reviews of the book more than anything. And it's really heartwarming the things that people have said about reading the book. I get a few. There's been a few bad ones. People come in there, but they by and large are angry and don't make sense. But Series Colony Cavalier, there's a link to it off my website. I do consultations on my website. I put a fee there because that is like work, and there I couldn't keep up with everybody, and it really weeded out people that were kind of just yanking my chain back in the day. But I do 3 or 4 a week consultations like that. People that feel they've been through the same thing. There've been like coming up on 3,000 people that have contacted me saying, you know, can you help me out here? I think I went through the same thing, or similar things. And so like, that's a lot, man, for it to be any kind of other phenomenon. There's a lot of people that have felt like they've gone through the same exact thing or similar experience of that technology, been through the technology of 20 and back tech.
Well, that's why I think you get so much love for your work, is because a lot of people identify with it. And I think more people than we can even imagine have had experiences that because of the programming that we have on this field.
They're just unaware. They're unaware that it's possible.
Or we're just, you know, people are just kind of scared, like, yeah, I don't want people to call me crazy or anything. But the memories are there, or at least a few memories.
That's so the biggest challenge, is finding somebody to speak to about it. That's the biggest challenge. And I thought I was taken several times. I had many different memories of being at different ages and sitting in a room with extraterrestrials. So I thought that they took me several times and I didn't remember the abduction. And then pointing back, I went, oh my God, that happened. And once I accepted that, then the rest of the memories could come. Then it was like a, you know, the floodgate came of the memories, and they all made sense. And I think a lot of people, millions of people are unaware right now. Millions of people are unaware that it's possible. And once they hear the information, they go, wait a minute, that might have happened. That might, you know, and it explains a lot of their inner mysteries of contact. Like everybody listening to or searching for my show or me has already seen something they probably shouldn't have seen that causes that inspires them to research it, you know, because people that have seen nothing don't research it. They just think it's crazy, because they're doing good with what they're doing.
Yeah. So Series Colony Cavalier, and I'm going to leave links, of course, on your dedicated page on KBOO. This is one of my favorite interviews, because I love the fact that you are so clear about your experience. So it's entertaining, but it's also educational. And I think it instigates in people like their own memories and their own capacity to what we call remote view, which is, you know, basically whatever, meditate and try to see with your third eye, with your vision, what's happening in the galaxy and our solar system. Yeah.
I think that I do want to say this, that I'm starting to see, you know, in the beginning, I was just talking to people. I would do a couple shows and sometimes they had a lot of views, and I've been on shows they had 100 views, you know, and I'm just talking about it. But now I'm getting to the point where, because of the book, I believe that I'm known well enough that I'm starting to get attacked. And I've seen things like, there are clips where I talk about things and I'm starting to see myself like on TikTok, like clips of my interviews on TikTok, and they cut it up and make it look really incredible, because you know what I mean? Like they really discredit me with the editing. I've seen people that said, oh God, for instance, like, oh yeah, we went there every week. And then they show it again and go, oh, I went there just once a month. And the thing is, we went there sometimes every week. And sometimes we went just, you know, like they cut out the sometimes. And so it makes it look like I'm telling a different story. But my point is, I'm not complaining about it, because when you're taking flak, you're over the target, you know, and if they're going to waste their time and energy to come and attack me, that means it's worth their time and energy. So that to me is just a pat on the back. The more that I get attacked like that, the more I think it's just a pat on the back. And everybody can make fun of me, like down to my mom. If I see myself on mainstream TV, and they're making fun of me constantly, like I'm crazy, it doesn't matter, because anybody that picks up the book and reads it from cover to cover is going to understand that I'm not making this up. And this isn't something that is for any other reason. Like the book explains it literally and makes a lot of sense out of it from A to B. And I think a lot of people have a great deal of memory recall, but they don't have A to B recall. They're kind of confused in the order. Mm-hmm. And that's why it makes a lot of people that have been coming forward and whistleblowing unrelatable because they just have, they don't have everything sorted out yet. So because of the, for whatever reason, I got the memories of it. I worked on it and I got the A to B right. So, you know, I'm unique in that regard, but I'm not unique in the fact that it happened to me.
Well, that's really unfortunate to hear that people have done that to you on TikTok. I've interviewed a couple of social media stars, and they're young, you know, social media stars. All they do is, you know, fun videos to entertain the audience. And yeah, they all agree that, hey man, like once you start putting yourself out there, get ready. Because sure, they're going to shower with you with love, but there's going to be a percentage, basically, they're just going to try to trash you and bring you to the ground.
Oh yeah,
they all agree on this. It's like the price you pay, and that you have to just deal with that. Yeah.
Everybody likes to see a train wreck, and so the bottom line is they're trying to get people to click a 5-second video, and so if they can make something look like it's being torn down, it's more attractive than trying to explain a 20 years of stuff. So it's about clicks for one thing, but. No, I think we're seeing something else. I think a lot of the conferences I've been to in the last, because I do live speaking engagements. I'll be in Silicon Valley for a tech one later in September, and I'll be in Orlando for one that's really like a big name, big ticket conference. But I've been doing speaking engagements. What I found is that there's always one guy that's disingenuous. We're starting to get people infiltrate, and they're having false information that they present. And they tend to be ex-CIA agents. They tend to be guys that will tell you, I retired from the CIA. It was 14 years ago, but I don't do that anymore. But since then, now I can talk about my ET experiences. And by the way, we're only dealing with like 20 or 30 species. We're not going far out there because that's impossible. And so we're seeing disinformation come from them through the conferences and on some of the media outlets. Some of these guys are just shills. And so, but it's not up to me to go and vet everybody. I'm not a researcher and that's not my role. My role is to, I'm telling my story and you do with it what you will, because it's for history's sake. It's not for.
Think you're doing what you're supposed to be doing. And yeah, you're right. I think, unfortunately, there's probably agents there out there that are just, that's their job. They're getting paid to discredit other people just for whatever kind of like the last minutes here in this battle for Earth. They're not going to give up. So
like I said, it's a pat on the back. If they're going to spend the resources of having somebody infiltrate and spend their whole life doing this and go public, and they're going to pay those resources, that's a big deal. And that means we're valuable. If they have to do that, that means that what we're saying is greatly valuable if they have to try to destroy it. You know, like I said, when you're taking flak, you're over the target, and that means we're doing something right.
Okay. So right before we conclude this awesome conversation for Squirrels Know here with Tony Rodriguez, what are your thoughts on galactic law? And I'll just say this really quickly, is that based on what I've been informed the past year, what people call the Galactic Federation of Worlds, which is kind of, it's not easy to explain because it's not just one federation and it's not three-dimensional, it's multidimensional, it's multiple levels. It's hard.
Very complicated.
We can call it the Galactic Federation of Worlds. And there is something that we can call galactic law, which is it's a set of cosmic precepts that are to be enacted in our solar system and actually throughout the galaxy. What are your thoughts on the work of the Galactic Federation of Worlds and this concept of galactic law, finally, for the atheists especially?
Well, you know, I don't want to get too deep into things, but there is galactic law. There is natural law. You know, someone said that fear is consent, and consent is needed for anything. So when an animal gets afraid, then another animal will come and eat it. Fear is the consent that it needed. An animal can't just murder indiscriminately. It's the fear that gives the consent. That's why fear is, that's why we don't see people singing and dancing at the clam bake in bikinis. We only see gore. We only see things that cause us to be fearful on a subconscious level, because it creates consent for us to be victimized by our leaders. And so that's why there's a huge, everything is fear-based. So consent is the big law consent is our loophole for where we're at in the cosmos, for our existence. We have to give consent. And we do without knowing it. Yeah. The when you look at the situation, like, you know, I don't want to come off, I don't want to say something and be inflammatory, but let's just say there's a region of the world that does it, that is like the Wild West. Let's take the Wild West. So back in the day, the Wild West, there was no law. There was supposedly law, but there was nobody to enforce it. So people could go somewhere. It was not populated enough, and there was not a lot of law. So people could go somewhere and steal or assault people or kill people. There were gunfights, and there was no law. There was no witnesses. You ran up to somebody in the woods. There were no witnesses, and there was a lot of misbehaving. There were laws. The territories had laws. You couldn't murder, you couldn't steal horses. But if there was nobody around, did you break a law? And so space is like that a lot. And a lot of the people that obeyed the law ended up being victimized or not being able to enforce the law. So we think about it like this. It happens all the time where we have a great deal of law. We have a great deal of technology that enforces our laws. But there are many people that, because they have rights, don't get punished for what they've done wrong. They get away with it. And the Galactic Federation is obeying the law. And other species that have been down here doing bad things, including our own space programs, are not obeying the laws, their own laws specifically, and the law of the world. Like I said, contact involves abducting a kid. It's like our highest law. It's like literally our highest law. Like murder is secondary to kidnapping children. Do you get what I'm saying? Like there is no warfare that condones kidnapping children, going into a village and taking the kids and leaving. But it does condone going into a village and killing everybody. So do you understand? So like, it's literally on a societal level, like our highest crime. And that's what every ET is doing. All of the contact is an illegal thing to us. So we're not being respected in that manner. And the people that are obeying the laws can't come in and just enforce it because we're in a Wild West situation where it's not set up to happen yet. So
do you think the Galactic Federation is going to ramp things up? It's going to activate new things. Where do you see their actions, the actions of the beings that say that protect life and existence throughout the cosmos?
Well, at a certain point, we have to be aware of it. So, it goes about awareness. Like we are essentially one big organism. Like when we go to sleep, we interact with each other on a subconscious level as one organism, mankind, the whole planet. And we are not aware of it. So people like me and you are aware of what's going on, but that's another reason behind the secrecy all along and keeping us in the dark. The ETs got on the same page 1,000 years ago and said, quit interacting and posing as gods to these people and make it a secret so that they don't interact with us and so that they don't aspire to build a spaceship and come up here. And that's what's going on. So we have to do our own part here. And I like to think that proliferating this information that life up there exists, that these secret space programs exist, and that we're being victimized by our own government and by our own secret space program and by hidden governments and other extraterrestrials that are enabling them. We are being victimized by them. So that information has to get into the psyche of a mass amount of people. And then subconsciously, we'll just work it out. It'll work out because that's how it works. And that's another reason why they want to limit the population, because we're at such enough population to where we can make great things happen when we all desire it.
Yeah. And yeah, we just have to repeat that, well, slave labor is wrong. It is absolutely wrong. It should not be allowed. And we have it here. A lot of people consider our prison system some system of slave labor where inmates are paid, what, 20 cents for a full hour, a full day of work, for example.
Well, the 13th Amendment. Yeah. The 13th Amendment abolished slavery, but it also made it perfectly legal. It doesn't say that there will be no slaves. It says that no one shall be made a slave unless he's convicted of a crime. If you read the 13th Amendment, and it doesn't say what crime, it doesn't say speeding ticket or felony. It just says, if you're convicted of a crime, you may be enslaved. And so I think that that's where a lot of the labor goes. That's why the United States has the largest prison population, because they're taking those people into these 20 and backs to be slave labor throughout the solar system and build the infrastructure. I think that's the real resource. That's why they justify it morally, slavery up there. That's what I was kind of hinting at earlier, for one thing. But the other thing is that having been a slave, ultimately, I feel as a society, for a society, that it's self-defeating. It's self-defeating. So it stunts the growth of a society to enslave your own people, no matter for what reason, because what you're doing is taking energy away from their life. And we are slaves. We are debt slaves. So you have to get up and work a nine. Most people have to work a 9 to 5. There's a small percentage that don't have to, and they kind of cheer the system on. And so they work against it. But most people have to get up and work in order to beat the taxes and the depreciation on everything, no matter how well off you are, no matter how good you are at what you do. Even doctors have to show up to work after a time, even wealthy men get up and go to work. And so our system is built that way. We are enslaved in that regard. And the problem with that is that 99.9% of people are not following what they're really inspired to do. And it's stunting the growth of us spiritually and technologically. Like, people are not chasing what they're really good at. They're chasing what they're available at, what's available to them.
And yeah, so it's stunting the growth. Rent has to be paid, and mortgage has to be paid, and bills have to be paid. There's no time for dreaming. Yeah.
That's right. Well, that is stunting the growth of us as a species. So somebody that may have invented something or done something or came up with something that would be much better, spent a lifetime learning what their passion was and make it better for everybody, doesn't do that because they're running a 9 to 5 and they're too tired when they get home. So over time, when you roll the clock 100 years in the future, it really stunts our growth. And so at a certain point, the slavery is just going to not be, it's just going to go obsolete. It's just, that's the way it's going to have to be.
Yeah. Well, this has been an amazing conversation. And I just want to end my questions, my statements, with something a little longer and a little deeper. I want you, Tony, to share with us here on Squirrel Snow the deepest, most sacred thoughts in regards to the vastness of life and the cosmos and how this relates to our concept of God, the Great Spirit, or universal source. And in addition to that, if you have any thoughts, what do you think would be the role of Native American elders, initiates, and experts on star people in regards to these interactions with star nations, especially people that are, you know, the typical stereotypical Native American elder initiate would be a very humble person connected to nature, following tradition. What are your thoughts on this, the sacredness of
well, you didn't ask, you don't ask for much there, but I'm kidding. Those are a couple. I'll look at it as two questions. The sacred. So the entire time that I was up there, they really pushed atheism on us. They really did. They taught you atheism. But the entire time I did believe in a creator God. Like, I always have from birth till now, deep inside my heart, I feel that there is a creator of the universe, like in a mass intelligence. And I can use different terms. I think deep inside everybody knows it, and people are in denial of it because it's also a skill. So people purposely deny source or the creator God, because it frees you up to achieve things in that direction. So that's why they do it. But ultimately you're going to go back to that belief because it's the reality. So I've always believed in a creator God. And I feel that we are all just aspects of that. Of a larger intelligence of the universe, and our role in time, because time isn't what we think it is, but our role is just to make it better. So to make everything slightly better day to day, like just slightly better for other people, find an energy that's leaking or being lost and fix it, help it. You know, across the board, like that's really a simple thing to think about. But it doesn't get carried out very often. When you talk about the American Indian elders, right?
Yeah, elders or initiates.
So when we talk about those in any Aboriginal culture, so I lived in Hawaii for a long time. They're very very wise Hawaiians that I met. That were elders as well in that culture. And I think that, you know, if you take a pie slice of any, do you take 100,000 people, like a pie slice out of a population of any race or any time, in any time, that you get this many, you get X amount of people that are very strong workers. You get this many people that are warrior people. You get this many people that are lovers. and you get this many people that are wise leaders. And so you get a quality of people. Like when you start looking at populations as one organism and you start seeing us individually as cells that operate for a purpose inside the organism, that's what elders are. And they're all over. And the thing about the American Indians and all of the Aboriginal cultures is that they were in a perpetual balance. They did have technology that happened over time, but they were going for the spiritual technology throughout history. And so we saw the people that were more, we saw the organized cultures that were more self-centered come in and kind of cut the legs out from them. And now that those people are the very thing that those cultures destroyed the world for and look that aspire to, that have all this technology, the very thing that they need, the ceiling that's above them is where those elders are sitting. Do you understand? Like the spiritual knowledge of the Aboriginal cultures globally, are that knowledge is really the top of the food chain for what these people that have been leading things in history with technology. Like I said, technology has a ceiling, and above that ceiling is the spirituality that these ancient societies have known all along. That these cells inside these being, you know what I'm saying, that these one being of cultures have, that's what they are after. That's that what that knowledge is. Like spirituality, once you can connect to source and once you connect to outside of time space, which is the other thing that we do on my group, we research that. But once you connect to that, you connect to everything at once. We're all basically just one organism, and we have different purposes inside the organism, like a cell does inside a body. So these people that have been running the show all along and industrializing and really, you know, advancing the world. So it's not all bad. So a lot of advancements have come from Western culture. You know what I'm saying? The world is connected, and like the money system, everybody working is, we've all achieved great things. Us being enslaved and making us work has achieved great advances, but there's going to come a time when we're going to need to go back to what those elders knew all along. There's a time when that's going to be the next achievement, is to make everybody kind of be on that same page. And that's really what a fourth density or a meta-human or an uber-human culture is going to look like.
Wow. Well, yeah, that's awesome. The way I see it, we're a family of people. So regardless of race, you know, I believe that every racial variation of human on Earth has a specific gift and a specific role. And I know that the most famous genetic variation has been the Germanic genetic variation, Western culture, but we're all a family, and we all have a place.
Yeah, I think it's not genetics. I think it's just their culture. I think that when we've seen cultures really advance, they've been led by ET extraterrestrial influence to take over resources, and that's what history has had. That's really what it was. And then the thing is, you know, and I don't want to get into it. I don't want to be seen as like some kind of historical, you know what I mean, racial connotation, but it seems like it's almost like different races have been tempted throughout history. And it seems like when Western culture came to America and tempted the American Indians and said, look, you'll be slaves, or they tempted them with one thing or the other, the answer was always no. They were like, no, get out of here. We don't need you. And so their only response, the only thing they could do was to kill them, to, you know what I'm saying? Because they couldn't manipulate them, because they didn't need any of that. So cultures in the world that did trade with them were assimilated and did other bad things. You know what I mean? Like it became arms, they became extensions of this influence. And I don't think it's a genetic thing. It's not just because they were white people that they colonized. It was because they were influenced by ETs. And yeah.
Good point.
They were influenced by ETs to take over the world and in order to exploit resources. Yeah. And so
that is good point.
Leave that for another show. Yes. That's a lot of talk, yes. But there's a lot of evidence surfacing nowadays that says that, you know, even what's going on in Russia and a lot of the global events we're seeing are not us. They're actually ET influences fighting amongst themselves. And we are proxy. We're just an arm of them.
Yeah. Doing what they do best, which is creating distress, chaos, disorder, upside down things. So, well, tonight we had Tony Rodriguez here in Squirrels Know, and you can find his book, Ceres Colony Cavalier on Amazon. His website is tonyrodriguez.com, T-O-N-Y Rodriguez with an S.com. And you have a Patreon account. And wow, any last thoughts for tonight's episode?
No, this is a great talk. I love it when we can talk about deep stuff and it comes off really easy. So thanks for having me. This is really enjoyable. Thank you.
Thank you, Tony. All right.